from home, we are WNST. Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We are positively here at Coca's. I got to move the two-seater back to the three-seater, back to the two-seater. Mike Versigliano will be with us later on today. Also have some other great guests. Tom Pierce will be here from Classic 5 Golf. We really enjoyed some time with Max Weiss and with Alan McCallum. But this is one of our defending champions. Sometimes he's off in Colorado riding on a horse like John Wayne, and sometimes he's back here doing good things, making Baltimore percolate. There is an apparent residency in Columbia for this man. Is the king of public relations and all things Martin O'Malley and that administration. But now, I don't know, KO, I don't know what to say about Damian O'Doherty, who I met high atop the World Trade Center when I wrote Purple Rain 2. Now, 12 years ago, dude. So you and I have been at it a long time. You're in, you're out. I see you're online. I mean, Facebook knows we like each other. So your daughters pop up and things, you know, ski trip, different things like that. But then I get you back in the flesh, like I'm touching you here at Coco's Pub. So how are you?
What a place to be.
You've been here before?
Yeah, this is where I got my political career started, working for Senator McFadden and in the 45th Legislative District.
How does one get a political career started? What does that entail? I tried to do that
you
once.
Know,
you saw
that one I owe to a guy named Devin Dotson, who was the son of Senator McFadden and a UVA graduate, University of Baltimore law graduate, who worked for the Speaker and the Senate President, and now he is a top official for the State Environmental Department. So I owe it to him. He pulled my resume out, called me in for an interview, and then it was kind of raining outside in Annapolis, and I remember I couldn't get into the Senate building, so I like was drenched, huffing and puffing, and he kind of found me, brought me
Hello,
back.
Hello, young man.
And I was like, oh, I'm a mess. I'll never get this job. But Mike Miller had given the city senators a little stipend that they could use to pay staff. I was a law student at the time at the University of Baltimore, so to help out with all the liquor bills and legislation that the city dealt with. And you know, that was basically the time that David Simon and all those people chronicled in their famous content. You know, that was that period of time in Baltimore.
Turn of the century.
City. Yeah,
Turn
late the 90s. That's okay. Right. And that's how I got my start. And you know, it was a paid gig that I could do just while I was in law school. So you couldn't rely on it as a full-time job. But if you were going to law school.
Are you a lawyer?
Yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't
You don't brag about that.
I don't really hang out a shingle or do anything
I know
like
a lot
that.
Of people that have PhDs that don't make me call them doctor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can refer people to the best legal counsel in the world. I feel like that's a skill that I've got. But we're a public affairs firm. We're Maryland's oldest public affairs firm. And then we just created a partnership in total with Sandy Hillman, who's sort of a local legend, but also an international legend in public relations. So we do everything from strategy to PR to marketing, communications, all in that external public-facing space. If you're a corporation or a family office or a nonprofit that is in that public intersection between community and government and politics, we can help you get in good position.
That covers a lot. Community, government, politics. That's, you know, that runs the world.
That's where all those intersections are, you know. So that's where we like to be.
You know, a lot of directions I can go with you, but I'll just start with this. The state of the state at this point, I have not been fortunate enough to track down Wes Moore since he's been governor. Thought I was on that pathway last fall and some stadium Angelos things, you know, so I haven't really talked to him about it. And then the bridge collapses, right? So where were you? I was in Orlando, Florida at the NFL owners meetings, being locked out there, but I was in a hotel room at 5 o'clock in the morning, watching Johnny O on CNN, seeing the bridge gone and not believing that it actually happened. I mean, it's kind of crazy. We're open now, no bridge, but we got open as we sit here in the middle of June. You were a part of major government, Martin O'Malley's administration. Martin, when he came down to Fadley's the day he was promoting his book on better government, he told the story of being in Chrisfield when the tunnel caught on fire in Baltimore City, and he admitted he didn't even know there was such a thing called a tunnel. We all knew the bridge was there. Everybody could see the bridge. Some people didn't drive over it very often. But it's almost inconceivable from a if I were governor, I were mayor, I were elected, I were in, that the bridge went down and that there could be any playbook for that. You know, in any potential, even for the federal government to try to figure out how to the next 6 years. I mean, who's going to pay for it?
Two fundamental questions you're asking yourself as a leader, right? Which is, am I managing the crisis effectively? Right. I don't think there's any doubt that the collaborative leadership from the governor, even the president in the United States on down, you know, even having players like Bob Ehrlich appear to be on the team, so bipartisan unit of Marylanders sort of making sure everybody in Washington knows what the impact of this bridge collapse is, not just on our regional economy, but on the economy, if not the world. The Port of Baltimore is a major vein for all of commerce around the globe, and I think we're all reconfronting that as a blessing. The second thing that leader has to do then is saying, am I taking advantage of the opportunity that this crisis creates? And that is where we'll begin to see all of these players, from the county executive to the mayor to the governor, all work nimbly to see how they can utilize this as an opportunity to
make a better bridge,
right? Make a better transportation network, right? There could be, you know, should we be using ferries? Are there a bunch of other ways to get people around? Is this going to wake us up to a bunch of other opportunities that could help us grow our port or grow our city and region?
Well, it's an unthinkable, unspeakable thing, right? And you've been were you in the motorcade when the fire happened? I mean, things like that, but you know all the stories. The answer, I think, you know, plenty of people who were.
I think my frame of reference, which is, as you would appreciate, as somebody from the east side of Baltimore County, was the Hurricane Isabel experience.
Sure.
You know, for me, that was an opportunity to see how crisis can be turned into opportunity. You know, Jim Smith, our county executive at the time, basically used it as a chance to reform the whole. Now, you know, anytime he got into something, you know it was going to end it with a serious fashion. He reformed the national flood legislation, flood insurance legislation, based on the experiences of his residents in Baltimore County. So there's so many directions that you can
take
this.
Well, he said
off.
This isn't going to happen again, right, basically,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and you know, as a tout, that's right. And as a tout, I look at this thing, when I say a tout, somebody who believes in Baltimore and just wants it to show itself to the world, and Baltimore to the world. The Key Bridge is a great exemplar. But, you know, is this an opportunity to name the bridge after Barbara Mikulski or Nancy D'Alessandro Pelosi, people that have been just epic, enormous people that showcase to the world who we are, what we can be for the world, you know? So I like to have some of those civic booster conversations.
Well, and it does lend itself to that, but then there's
the pragmatism
of, like, my friends at Costas. We're doing the show next Thursday. You know, you got employees
that
are from
there,
across the bridge.
Right.
You know, it's just a completely different way of life for trucks. It started the first day when the highways were all backed up. We're like, oh, you cut a major artery off to take 50,000 cars a day. Guess what? Both the tunnels are going to be jacked up. And as Johnny O promised, I saw Johnny O out in Vegas 2 weeks ago, and we were just talking about this because he lives down that way. And he's like, you know, wait till we get the port really open. Then 695 is going to be a mess because all the trucks are going to have to use it.
That's right.
Because they can't use the bridge.
That's right.
And they can't use the tunnels in some cases.
And there's cut-through traffic that's going, you know, right through South Baltimore.
So you're going to see trucks going through Towson, Woodlawn, Pikesville, Parkville that used to just sort of sneak up from D.C.
Right.
And go that sleepy little Fort Smallwood,
right,
you know,
yeah,
and, you know, be past Dundalk and on their way up 95, right? That's gone now for a long, long time. And I think the traffic patterns, what I see, just getting home tonight from Coco's, if I was going to take 95, it'd be a little different. it's hard to envision all of that. Like, the minute it goes down, that iconic picture of Wes and Brandon together the first morning. But then there's, you wake up year two, year three, year four, year five, there's still no bridge. We know that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, well, they got their best people on it. People like Dana Peterson Moore is running the city's effort around the bridge. The Unified Command, you know, is bringing sort of, I think, a great deal of apolitical gravitas to this whole experience.
Everybody said that. Yeah, I've had Republicans come to me and say, this is really bipartisan. This is like, there are very few things that can really bring together.
It takes a special leader like Governor Moore to know, like, when his words count and when Unified Command's words count. And he's been very, I think, deft in leading, but also allowing the Unified Command to do their thing, not politicize it in any way.
What else does this mean for the state in elections this year? Senators, we can certainly talk Hogan and Alsa Brooks. And you love the political play of that, right? Like, David Trone was out doing his thing. I met him right before the election. We were wondering what the matchup's going to be. This is, we've seen Georgia get spotlighted. We've seen Pennsylvania, Ohio, these other sort of swing states. This is a weird, weird swing state senatorial election in a state that is pretty blue until you drive around and you see this morning Trump and Andy Harris, I'm with Andy signs, you know, 2 miles from my house. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but on the blue side, I have palpable concern, and I've seen Larry's ads, and he's welcome to come. They're both welcome. Right. I haven't never met Angela Alsa Brooks, so you
right
can tell me about her.
You're right to be super critical or
concerned.
Or concerned about, you know, what it takes to beat Larry Hogan, because nobody's gotten that number here in Maryland. Yeah, he's sort of flown under the radar to the highest levels of popularity that we've seen. But it looks like
he said over and over again last year he didn't want to be a senator. It wouldn't have enough. Like, literally, he said that.
He's cynical enough to know there'll always be opportunity for him. If he can create an opportunity in Maryland where Democrats have to spend money to protect a blue seat in Maryland, they're already winning. He's already doing Mitch McConnell favors. He's already doing Donald Trump favors just by running. You know, but in the reality, if you just look at the
There's nobody else with a red hat that could win, that could potentially win, right?
Well, look, let me tell you this. He filed late because he knew he was weak in his own party. He didn't want Dan Cox getting this race, so he files on the last day. He goes up against Robin Ficker, who's like a career gadfly guy that stood up at the Bullets and Wizards games lampooning.
I've already
mentioned
him once.
Right?
Yes,
so,
today.
So
I did that to the Yankees last month,
guy,
proudly.
Let me, you know. As a Democrat, sometimes you have to pretend like you're going to be critical about the Republicans in this sense. Like, Republicans are not self-critical. Like, here's the deal. Larry Hogan's opponent, 3 out of 10 people in his Republican Party, which he's been leading for 8 years or more, said, you're not for us, Larry. We're going to go with this career gadfly. 3 out of 10 people in his party. So he's already at the same kind of numbers that Kathleen Kennedy Townsend had when she ran. She had a nobody, a bad grocer, to get 30% of her. We Democrats all flipped out because we knew that was a big problem for her. The Republicans feel the same thing. They know he's a dead man walking in Maryland. So this is Angela Alsa Brooks' race to lose. And it looks like this playful game that Larry Hogan has always been able to use for his own political self-interest to play off of Trump in a deep blue state, that jig is going to be up. He's a dead man walking. And so only cynically can you say, well, he was a success because he got, you know, Marylanders to spend tens of millions of dollars to protect a seat that should always be
You think the race isn't close. You believe that?
I just
you don't believe it's 55-45? You don't believe it's 52?
Oh, you know.
You don't believe.
I think Larry Hogan's the most skilled, you know, multi-faced politician.
A lot of Democrats going to vote for Larry Hogan.
Larry Hogan has to reconcile in front of everybody.
Because you know what? He's not going to vote with the Republicans, but he's not going to vote with the Democrats.
What are you talking about? He's not. Is he going to vote for Mitch McConnell or not? Or is he going to vote for whoever the Republican majority
leader? That's the part of it that, as just as a citizen, and I've sat with Larry, and I voted for Larry once, right? Like,
he's so, going to go with the
Republican. Like, I sit and I watch the commercials, and I see on Pride weekend, as I'm wearing some Pride colors, him walking with Pride people when he's never, ever, 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 ever supported anything along those lines. And when saying that he wouldn't vote with the Republicans in D.C., I keep trying to envision him being anything like the three or four people who walked against all of them, who have all been thrown out of their seats in Illinois, right? You know, all over the country. I just don't believe he would ever go and vote with Democrats. I, as a premise, I don't believe that's true. And that makes it hard for me with Larry.
He'll dress it up like any lipstick on a pig, but it's eventually the gig is up, the jig is up, the Larry Hogan hoax is coming to a reality in Maryland, because women in Maryland aren't just gonna like take his word for it on abortion rights or any of those issues. They're just not they're not gonna take his word for him that they've got him in the U.S. Senate. Because he's got a record of just going along with all those boys. That's what he's going to do when he gets there. And that's not what Marylanders want. He's a dead man walking, can't even get his own party excited about him. Now he's picking a fight with Trump. You know, so his coalition is not what it was in 2013 against Anthony Brown or against Ben Jealous. And he's going up against, quite frankly, a much more formidable candidate.
Tell me about her, because I've never sat with her.
Man, this is a Duke-educated lawyer who went to, you know, first days in Maryland public affairs trying to get a job. She worked with, judges in Howard County. She's worked in the state's attorney's office. She's fought for women getting their due and say in the court of law. She's just has a very dynamic
record. She should get 90% of the female vote in this state based on her politics and what she's done. She really should.
From your lips to God's
ears. Well, and you would think women will be more motivated to come out and vote against Trump again, right?
Look,
right?
I'm
wondering who's... Because, look, at the heart of this, Damien, let's get back to the core issues. We sit here in Baltimore City, and Brandon Scott's not here, although this is his favorite crab cake. We're at Coco's. Damien O'Doherty's our guest. It's all courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got the Gold Rush Double Sevens to give away. You get one. One for Alec Oprah, for you. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care. The story of the election 6 weeks ago here was that nobody votes, right? Like, people did not come out in this state to vote. I'm wondering, in a state where Biden's going to win, right? Like, you know, whether people request ballots, mail. We got a voting problem in this state. We got a voting problem in our culture, in our country. We always talk about that. But, like, this was clear to me 6 weeks ago that nothing screws an election up quicker than when nobody votes, you know?
Yeah, and if you're a Baltimorean or part of the Baltimore diaspora as I am, you know, you just see why your clout is diminishing in the state legislature and Washington and other places, because people aren't getting out to vote in this region. And then you look at what's happening in Prince George's County. It's a completely different dynamic. It is a highly engaged Democratic primary vote that elected Governor Wes Moore and now just put such a whooping on Mr. Trone that, you know, you just got to say, being Angela Alsobrooks, being an 8-year executive plus being the state's attorney in that district for a couple terms, you know, man, what a irreplaceable advantage that is. That would have been like, you know, being mayor of Baltimore in 1960, you know,
right.
It's the most significant perch you could have in Maryland politics. And she's right there and has done it with, you know, not a lot of fuss, not a lot of muss.
Well, nobody in Baltimore knows her. Let's be frank. You know, I mean, if I stood up right now and she walked in, how many people in here would know who she is?
Yeah,
I looked at pictures of her literally this morning, because at some point I'm going to meet her.
I think they would identify with her. I think there's a warmth about her and an authentic charisma that she has. She's very understated, but this is a person who has prepared for this job for, you know, 30 years, and you can tell by the network of people she has put together all across the state. So, you know, Larry Hogan, formidable formula for people like
In 2013, Anthony Brown, he put together the coalition. Same with Ben Jealous, but his coalition on all sides, the moderate left and the hard right, is dissembling for him. He can't keep it together. And so Larry Hogan is a dead man walking in his native state.
Damon O'Doherty calling it like he sees it here with Maryland politics as well. So you're away from the Orioles. Have you? They're pretty good. Have you caught up on this? I mean,
it's
this
a
is
a magical thing. Just like,
and you're far away from it. You're watching on television from far. I mean, you don't live here anymore. You spend time here. You're back and forth. But the Orioles go with you. They go in your pocket with you when you leave here, right?
Yeah. When you see the Mr. Rubenstein's ads, right? Like just
splashing
the in-house ads that they unleash the in-house creative team under the new ownership, and they're doing great spots. You can just see all parts of the organization are much more excited, and they're allowed to breathe a little bit. It seems like they were once sort of kept under wraps. It seems like talent all across the organization is being unlocked and unfurled in a little bit, you know, not just on the field, but all over the organization. That's lovely to see, and I think that's straight from the top.
You think I'll get my media pass back?
I don't know. I'm always interested in your any way we can help, please.
If I told you what has transpired already, as a good Baltimorean and as a man who cares about civic concerns and public affairs, and you know,
all the money you make, and you should have your own special box up there.
You would be appalled at.
We should get
how the kid from Dundalk,
box.
The Venezuelan kid from Dundalk's been treated.
You need your own box.
I'm not allowed to say I'm Venezuelan anymore if I get my press pass back, because that was apparently offensive to them, that they allow my Caucasian employee in but not the Venezuelan guy. And that for me to bring that up is untoward. But to bring up the integrity to ban me to begin with is
look,
not.
Here's another piece of advice for people that are professionally trying to deal with that organization is, you know, Mr. John Angelos is still over there, and he's still – you know,
yes, he is. And Greg Bader still runs the place.
They're still playing some role. So there's obviously some sort of transition period that's going on.
I'm glad you pointed that out, that John Angelos is still on the man. He's, you know, the Angelos family is still involved with the team.
That's a super common practice to have old ownership stay on board in some capacity so that you can transition appropriately. So I wouldn't read too much into that, but
That's a reality.
I think that's a healthy thing, and you know.
Well, they couldn't fire everybody on opening day. He took over a $1.8 billion going concern with a chance to win the World Series. There is nothing. Attendance is up 27%. There's nothing to
people
be,
are going down.
There's nothing to be done right now. I agree with that.
Weekend games are selling out.
Well, the Phillies are coming in this weekend. That's going to be something. And Fleet Week this week. I've done Fleet Week all week.
I haven't seen any of the ships yet.
Well, we got the ships coming in. We got the planes coming over. Well, I'm going to be down at Cooper's in Fells Point on Friday. I'll have the Gold Rush Doubler Sevens to give away. And I also have some great guests. Ron Furman's coming down on Friday. I believe Wendy Bronfine from Curio Wellness is coming down Friday. Bill Cole from Cole Roofing is coming down Friday. Not the other Bill Cole, though I saw both of them in Las Vegas. Damon O'Doherty's here. We're having crab cakes. We're at Coco's. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Mike Resigliano, Tom Pierce from Classic 5 Golf are going to be my final guests. So, listen, you came over. What can I help you with? What's important to you? I've talked about all my issues. What's going on with – what are your issues? Why are you here? You're living like in Meriwether or something, right? What's going on over there?
Yeah, well –
did you take my condo down there?
I took your condo idea. We tried to get WNST a new studio over there with the Meriwether District. It's been
I want it right in the middle of the ice.
A project I've been following, working on for almost 20 years, and it's popping out there in the Meriwether District. So I have what I call the Meriwether residency, and I'm living in two communities, Snowmass Village, Colorado, and Columbia, Maryland. Both were founded in 1967.
Tell everybody who your congresswoman is in Colorado.
Was Lauren Boebert, but she got chased out of the district.
Nice.
And so she's running in another part of the state.
Not many. How many people live in your – I mean, Lauren Boebert's this international brand for idiocy, but, like, there's, like, 10,000 people living here. Like, you have no people, right?
So she has a district that includes really populous places like Grand Junction, et cetera.
But so there aren't voters. There's a couple hundred thousand voters.
She also represents all the mountain towns, too. So okay. It's a Not enough mountain towns to overcome the down valley voter. Yeah.
Ooh, boy. Yeah. Okay. So you were saying what else are you working on? You were giving me. I don't know. I screwed you up. You said you live in two different places.
Just trying to find more and more ways to celebrate and elevate Maryland's hospital workers. You know, after the pandemic, this community of workers all across the state have done so much, serving 6 million people. So we're trying to get the word out to the legislative community and other people about what their needs and desires are. You know, that's important. And then we're excited to see the state, hopefully some of these older entrenched organizations like the Public Service Commission, who, you know, seem to be a little bit reactive and not with going with the flow of the leadership of the Moore administration, which is basically making a bet that if we can grow this Maryland economy, we can have the blueprint for Maryland's future, we can reduce class size, we can improve equity in the schools, we can do all those things. But if we can't grow the economy, we're going to get
stuck. We can't pay for it.
Yeah. We can't pay for
it. Right.
And so, but we still have organizations in Maryland that have this sort of reactive role, you know, whether it's in data centers like we saw with the Public Service Commission or the electrification of the state. How do we electrify the state? Do we have generate more power here? Are we going to move line through transmission? How are we going to connect the wind to the people that need the power? We need more transmission. How are we going to? So we need these organizations that are part of the new Moore administration to start looking more like conveners of the future and solutions for that, rather than their more reactive sort of style, which, you know, tends to just slow everything down. So that's one thing I'm looking forward to seeing is some of these old administrative functions catching up to the speed of Governor Moore's leadership, which is cool to hear a Democrat talk like that, right, about growth. You know,
well, I hear the red line coming back to life. I hear all sorts of things, right?
Yeah.
How much of it are dreams and how much are realities? That's what you can get done in 4 years and try to get reelected.
That's right.
Is he going to run for president? Is that where we are? I mean, I've always believed that from the beginning.
I learned a long time ago that the
you tried that, by the way.
The best way you can run for president is put your head down and focus on everything you can locally. And the more you master that, the more what you look up, you'll see people trying to grab you and bring you to their state or their city to show other people how it's done. And that's how that happens. So I think he has a much, you know, he's a very present. Here's the amazing thing about Wes Moore. He has the capacity to capture people's attention and then lead them to ways that they can engage positively. You hear him talk about it as service will save us. And I just think that's an incredible power that we have few people that are doing that. The cool thing about that is when you are in the moment, you are in the moment. You're not having designs for the presidency or looking back 10 years and seeing what you could have done better back then. You're focused on right now, and that's a rare talent that Governor Moore has.
Well, and certainly the time is now with the bridge, right? I mean, there's an incredible opportunity out of tragedy.
Stay present,
right?
Stay focused.
Well, you got your opportunity to get a crab cake. We're at Coco's Pub. We're over here in Lauraville. It's a Pride Week. I got some Pride colors. Marcella's around here. I already had the coconut shrimp. Rasig's going to come here. We're going to talk some sports. Tom Pierce is here. He's from Philly. He runs Classic 5. We're down here by Mount Pleasant. So we're going to get all – did I get everything in? Did I leave anything out? When are we going to Merriweather together? You going to Maggie Rogers next week?
No.
Leave a light on.
I'm looking at the August
come
shows.
On.
I'm looking
Let's
at
go.
The August
Let's go to
shows.
Maggie Rogers next week. You and me. You're not going to Lannis? Next, no,
Joan
Jett,
nothing till August.
Joan Jett, she's an Oriole fan.
But I got a little perch for you.
Well, what's going on in August? Totally. Let me look at the Merriweather schedule before I get out of here, because like I gotta figure out if you and I are going to a show together, because we do some concerts. Merriweather, what about Hootie and the Blowfish?
Yeah, that's a
Hootie and the Blowfish,
show.
August 3rd. Let's go to that one. Come on,
I like that.
I had Mark Bryan on this morning. He's
I
on
can
the
do
show
August
this
3rd.
And the other one, this would be really good for us. You and me do Lake Street Dive on September 13th.
That would be cool.
Or do you want to do my morning jacket on September
27th? That's a great guitarist.
Yeah, I love my morning jacket. We'll do that, you and me.
That's right.
Damon O'Doherty, Colorado via Catonsville, via Baltimore, via Maryland, and always leading with the Maryland flag. He is you're still KO, or what do I call
you? Yeah, we're KO Public Affairs, and we did have a great merger with Sandy Hillman, the epic mastermind of the original Harbor Place. So we were more than tickled to become a part of her legacy. So KO Public Affairs, Hillman Communications, all one thing. And then Josh White, guy that's built some of the best public affairs lobbying firms in the state of Maryland, is now flying his flag.
Can I be a lobbyist when I grow up? You have to be a lawyer to be a lobbyist.
Anybody can be a lobbyist. Anybody can do it.
I think I'd be good at it from what I understand.
You were tenacious.
When I was drinking beer in Vegas, Howard Perlow and those guys.
You got follow through. That's what
several people said, when you're done doing this, you should be a lobbyist for. And I'm thinking, I said to somebody, and I had a couple of drinks. I said, I'm only going to lobby for good-ish. That's what I said. I said, you can't buy me to lobby for, you know.
Think about what your vision of the future is, right? Yeah. Think about what your vision of the future is, and then find people that align with it. You could find some clients.
All right. We're looking for love, joy, laughter, and crab cakes. It's a Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. The Gold Rush Doubler 7s. I'm having a hard time. Gold Rush Doubler 7. I'm going to work on that. We're here having crab cakes. We're going to be on Friday doing Fleet Week and Flyover. We're going to be at Cooper's South. That's the original Cooper's down on the square in Fells Point. Got some great guests. Ron Furman's going to come down and talk rock and roll and beer with me. Bill Cole's going to be there. Wendy Bronfine's going to be talking about cannabis issues with us down in Fells. And we'll be talking about Fells. I had Patrick Russell on last week as well. Costas next Thursday before the Orioles beat the Yankees. And then on the 25th, Tuesday the 25th, we'll be at Pappas Pub, Pappas Restaurant in Parkville.
Legendary.
Well, I'm eating well. Eating good in the neighborhood, man. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Love you, Dame. Be good. All right? Thanks for coming by. He left town, and he's... only comes and visits me once a year now, except I see him on the internet with all those cool little videos. Take me to Meriwether, Damien. Back for more. We are not in Columbia. We're in Lauraville. We're Coco. Stay with us.